Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Moali.
Hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Moali, and today's episode is a really special one. We're pulling back the curtain on the personal, the professional, and the deeply pleasurable with none other than Dr. Patty Britton, a true legend in the field of sexology. Known as the mother of sex coaching, Dr. Patty has spent decades helping people reconnect with desire, heal sexual wounds, and embrace pleasure at every stage of life. In today's episode, we'll dive into the pivotal life moment that led Dr. Patty into this field, how her own definition of pleasure has evolved, what she learned about sex and aging, and yes, she'll even share which sexual experience she'd relive if she could. If you ever wondered what keeps desire alive across the decades or what most people are still getting wrong in bed, this is the episode for you. And before we jump in, I want to let you know about something very exciting. We are launching the second season of LA Love Lab, our live matchmaking event. The next event will be on Saturday, October 4th in LA. This is not your typical speed dating scene. It's an in-person experience led by two psychologists designed to help you connect meaningfully with people who are actually aligned with your values and emotional readiness. So we just launched and released early bird tickets. If you're wondering, maybe I meet someone by October. If you do, you're welcome to give the ticket to a friend, to a family members. All they need to do is to do our assessment, because based on assessment, we curate matches for people. So you can find all the details and grab your ticket through the link in the show notes. All right, let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sexology Podcast. I am so excited and honored to welcome Dr. Patty Britton to our show. Dr. Patty, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to be here.
I am so excited for this conversation. For our listeners that they might not know how we met, I met through the world of podcasting, and then I attended the different workshops you had, like you created. I read the books that you wrote. You had such a, and you have such a prolific career. And I was always curious about, like, how did Dr. Patty arrive to the place that she is? She has done so many interesting things. One story that you shared with me many years ago that stuck with me, that, like, you were working at Planned Parenthood. You talked about those experiences. So you just published your book, which is a memoir. What led you to write that book?
Oh, so many things. For one thing, the title is my life story, which is Chasing Sex. And the subtitle is Wanting Love, Finding Myself. And in six words, that's my life story. So I love to say that it's the story of a little girl named Patty and how she emerged into a persona called Dr. Patty, but stayed Patty all the while. And so I think that the inspiration, and I so appreciate your asking me about this because it's very emotional and deep for me. When you are in your 70s, as I am, and you look at your life ahead of you, and you look around you as people are aging and losing their memories, You say to yourself, I got to write this down before I forget. And what happens as a writer, it's so exciting to me, is that when you go into what I call the vortex of writing and of your memory banks, it emerges. It's like a floodgate opens and the stories and the evolution of your life path starts to unfold, and it's sometimes unstoppable. So I see myself naturally as a writer and an artist, because writing is an art form. But there also were things in my past that informed how sex and sexuality and pleasure and sexiness came about. And some of that was really influenced by my mother's family, my matriarchy that preceded me, because my grandmother and my aunties were very sexy women, and they were empowered women. All of them, actually all of them, had careers and marriages and became these icons for sexual women who were part of the world. And that influenced me greatly. But also, I think that part of what happened for me as a girl is the history, and you know this from reading the book, of various abuses, molestations, trauma events that somehow I found my unique and true voice to be able to overcome. I found that courage and strength to step over what some would call the victimhood and become not only a survivor, but a thriver. And that message carries into all of my work today and always has. I've always been an advocate for women's and those who identify as women's sexual empowerment and life empowerment. So I think those are kind of the two main things that really inform me. Plus, I am a child of the 1960s. You know, in some ways, I'm an old hippie who grew up. And the Love Generation is part of what informed who I am and who I became as an advocate for women's power and feminism.
Thank you for leading by example of showing your vulnerable self and writing your life stories and the challenges you had. Something that at times I experience is that many women that there are in more maybe conservative communities or people who are not in the field, they assume that women who are sexually confident or sexually liberated, they are born into that environment. There is some truth to that, but as you wrote in your book, you also like experienced challenges, adversity, pain, and all through that, you paved your way and paved the way for so many women. Again, I'm always at awe of everything that you've done in the field. Like as far as like, I have videos that are in VHS form and you're teaching.
Don't date me.
I was like, one day I was like taking notes. My husband was like, oh, is that a kitchen in 70s? I let you've been doing the work for years and years. So what I'm curious about is like, what are the pivotal moments in your life that led you to the field of sexology?
Well, I think that aside from having these role models of my aunties and my grandmother, my mother was liberal. And there was a TV show called Maude, not Harold and Maude, the movie, which is a great movie, but Maude. And it was about this really outspoken, loud women's advocate and voice of the character named Maude, who was married to a man who was actually conservative. And so it was so fun to look at that as kind of a shadow of what my family was like, because my mother was always the one who would take a stand for the underdog and invite people to our home who were not really in the mainstream, but in marginalized communities and lifestyle. And I will say right up front that one of my relatives is none other than Xaviera Hollander, who wrote the first book on going behind the closed door of being a sex worker. Mm-hmm. She was, then we used to say prostitute and a madam, and a very, very famous columnist for Penthouse for over 35 mm-hmm. years. She wrote, Ask Me, what was it? Ask Me, Madam, or something like that. So having, I think it's in my DNA. I really do.
As a calling.
because there's something about having that in your family system, who, by the way, she was maligned. She wasn't exactly adored or loved by my family. But there's something about that sex positivity. And I remember an incident when my grandmother burned her book, The Happy Hooker, for which, by the way, 30 years later, I wrote a chapter. And so that connection is so strong, and that sense of advocacy for speaking the truth about sex and sexuality and being a voice for others. I think that that's one of the pivotal moments. But I think that also, you know, having suffered the pain of being held hostage, having suffered the pain of being captive by a boy in high school who threatened to ruin my father's career if I told anyone that he had locked me in the cabin that I had visited unknowingly, and all kinds of events that happened as I emerged as a little girl, as an older girl, as an adolescent, they all are part of the fabric of self. And when you find that voice, again, it's finding your own voice and are able to articulate or even maneuver through these events to overcome them, to step out of them, to step through them and then step over them. I was able to do that. And I think that strength and that experience gives me a depth of being able to be with my clients or write or be a voice for others. And it's not just gender-based. It's not just those who identify as women, but humans in general who have suffered or been victimized or didn't have that knowing that they had the power within to speak and to, I'll say, manipulate. Because all communication is manipulation, if we think about that. So it's being able to maneuver and manipulate your way out of really bad situations. And that strengthened me and that informed me, and it probably motivated me to want to do more. And I also think that I have a love of pleasure, a love of sensuality, a love of sex. Sex is medicine to me. And I imbue that in all of the work that I do with my clients, with my colleagues, and the trainings that I've done, that we really have to have respect and a sense of honoring of the power of sexuality. And when we go there, there's a different energy that resonates around sex and sexuality, which we could deconstruct, but we're not going to do that right now.
I agree with you. And I think as I go through different phases of life, seasons of life, my own relationship with pleasure changed. And also for people, I used to see that it's good to have pleasure in your life. But kind of like echoing what you said, I think it's a form of activism. It can be a healing kind of form of medicine. So it's really important for people to invest in their pleasure in a way like unapologetically, because that on its own, it's very powerful. I know one of our colleagues, they talk about sex magic and talking about how you can use orgasm as a way of ending, like sending the energy, ending war. I don't know if that's resonate with all, but I think sex is very, very powerful. And I know you had so many wonderful experiences in your life. So if you could relive one experience from your past, exactly as it happened, tell us which one would you choose?
Well, I do have regret that some of the abuse that was really levied on me as a high school girl and then later with a gynecologist who really trashed a boundary. I wish I had had what I now know to be the ability and the wherewithal to report them and to not let fear be my guide, but faith be my guide. And so those are rewrites that I wish I could do, because we cannot and should not tolerate that kind of abuse. But as you ask me, there also have been moments of sexual ecstasy in my life where I have had what one author writes of as transcendent sex, or where the spirituality that is a component of even how I teach sex and train others to do the work that I do, sexuality can encompass our mind, our emotions, our bodies, our energy, and our spirit. And when we can merge all of those five components and we can transcend kind of the reality of now and soar, that blissful experience I have had several times. And it's often through orgasm, but it can be through connecting. I remember one experience where there actually wasn't even physical touch, and yet I was transcending through this orgasmic pool and wave and bath of energy. And so I think that if I were to relive that, especially as a woman in her 70s, where orgasm is slower now, where desire is quieter now, where behavior doesn't work in the same way that it did. I'm speaking out to my peers there who are seniors. Our expectations have to shift, and we have to really embrace what is and find the deliciousness in what is. And that's where pleasure comes in, because I often say to my clients, I want you to keep a pleasure log. And that's because that's something I did for myself. And had to learn to find pleasure in a beautiful piece of music, or pleasure in getting a therapeutic massage and the feeling of oil on my skin, you know, or pleasure in a blood moon. We had a blood moon last night. That was a full lunar eclipse. Or pleasure in a flirt across the room with someone that ignites something in you, that's that erotic spark. Pleasure is not just at the physical level, but pleasure is part of our wellness and our health. And, you know, I'm sure you're aware that it took until 2019, for the World Association for Sexual Health to actually have a statement in support of pleasure as a human right, as a sexual right, as part of health. And that was a huge shift in the clinical world's understanding and acceptance, that pleasure is not the P word that it used to be. Even as I grew up and as a young adult, that one of the P words was pleasure. Like, we didn't talk about pleasure. We talked about sexual intercourse as a mechanical act. And then it began to expand, especially for my own trajectory, my own seeking experience of sexual enlightenment. And I think I'm a lucky person that I've experienced that. And it's not a place that you can easily go, and you can't just snap your fingers and say, okay, I'm going to go for sexual enlightenment or sexual bliss or, you know, that transcendent orgasm every single time. No, it doesn't happen like that. But when it does, it's extraordinary. It's like standing at the top of the mountain and seeing the entire vista of the universe. So that would be, I know that was a long answer, but that would be an experience I would love to relive. Thank you very much.
I love all of that. I have so many questions because I feel close to you. First of all, I think orgasms are magnificent. It breaks my heart when some women haven't learned to experience it. And I know that sometimes people say that the intensity changes throughout the year. I know that I was listening to one of the colleagues, she said, like, oh, different stages of life. It's like you're watching, first you're watching ocean front seat, and it seems like then later on it feels like you're watching ocean behind the murky window. And my mother and I, we never talk about sex, but I immediately called her. I was like, how are your orgasms?
And what does your mother say?
She said, mines are intense and there's just not much change. And you know what's interesting and very, very uplifting? But does it change? I know you talk to a lot of women. You teach women, you talk to women. Does it change? Or if you're healthy, it remains the same?
It depends. So what affects our orgasmic capacity or ability or expression is the whole self. So one of the joys of getting older is that you don't care as much.
I love about, that about aging.
About being judged. Or, you know, I remember being with Betty Dodson, who was a very dear friend, and we did orgasm-directed body coaching together a long time ago, which also inspired me to go deeper and expand that beyond the body to sex coaching as its own profession, which is a talk-only modality that can include and embrace touch. And I remember, you know, her irascible personality. She was so irreverent, you know, and saying, let's see, should I really do it the way Betty would do it? You know, but she would say, A. I don't give a what people think about me. I'm this age. And she meant it. And there's something freeing about becoming older because you know who you are. And if you don't, you need to book a session with one of us and we can help you find that. But because we're more anchored in our sense of self and knowing ourselves, we have that sense of confidence about the self. Whether we have that sense of confidence about our orgasmic ability or capacity or the ability to actually experience the ocean, my observation is that the ocean becomes more like a puddle. And unfortunately, it's because our bodies are slower to respond. So we need more and different kinds of stimulation. And we need to honor where we're at. We need to honor that it may take more, literally, or a sex toy, or a different kind of lube, or more ramping up. Because if there's one thing that I see missing in most couples' sexual expression, it's actually the erotic side. It's not the behavior side. It's the allure. It's the building up desire to then experience body-to-body contact. And so orgasm can be explosive if there's been a day of preparation or longing or desire. And that can lead to a higher level of orgasmic expression. But my observation is, and my own experience, is that there is a calming down of the orgasmic response. And so that means feeling the other things that are there, because we know that orgasm is delicious. Orgasm, it has healthful benefits. We know that orgasm is something that gives us a payback in ways that sometimes we can't even define. But there's a journey to the orgasm, and it's not a cliche to say to couples or an individual, because this could be an individual experience as well as single people, what we experience is really the ride to there. And maybe the there is not what the there was 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. And that's part of the normalization that as a clinician, I always give to my clients, you know, stop shoulding on yourself. Albert Ellis used to say, stop shoulding on yourself. Don't make the word should what you're telling yourself. And stop expecting your body and the rest of you to respond in the way it did when you were a teenager or a young adult or a midlife if you're somebody who is a senior. So there's good news and bad news, because there's something so special about the juiciness of sensual touch and the letting go of all the pressure. I always say to my clients, get off the pressure cooker. Let me help you do that, because you're putting yourself in a pressure cooker. And that's true certainly for men as it is for women or those who identify in another way, that we do this to ourselves. And if we could just quiet that part of our self-talk down and allow ourselves to become embodied and experience the joy of that ride, everything would change. And you might even have more explosive orgasms because you're not.
I love that. And I think there is something about leaning to your erotic mind, building your erotic imagination. As you get older, you get more comfortable, especially for women, to explore different parts of yourself, and you're co-creating this experience, if you have experiences with other people, to kind of like step in that space. So that's also make it very exciting. But I also like that you're saying that making adjustment in your experiences and your sexual scripts as you're going through different phases, which completely makes sense. You talked about transsensual sexual experience. I had lots of great sex, and I'm sure you have like 10 times, 100 times more great experiences. But what makes a good enough sexual experiences different than transsensual one?
So transcendent sex, I love that you just coined a new word, which is transsensual. You just said transsensual. And I love that you actually coined that, because when I have a schematic that I created in two of my books called The Touch Continuum. And what I see with my clients is that they stop touching and then they become discouraged or despondent, and then they become sexless, and then they stay as non-touchers. And so I know I'm answering this question a little different way, but there are five levels of touch. And when I give permission to my clients that they can look at those five, they're like steps that go up. And some of those steps involve, you know, healing touch, you know, like, oh, honey, I have a headache. Could you just massage the back of my neck? Or affectionate touch. Hey, sweetie, I'm home. Hug, hug, hug. Or what we do with friends. Or sensual touch, which is slower touch, which is more directed toward that other person. And that can happen in a non-erotic way, or it can have an erotic charge to it, but then erotic touch. So erotic touch is where we build that, where we build the energy, where we build the connection, where we build the contact, and then sexual touch. And usually there's a difference between where we're touching erotically than sexually. So transcendent sex, to me, is when we actually literally leave our body, when we go flying. And there is a moment, you know, le petit mort is the French expression about what happens at orgasm. We go offline, our neocortex offline, and we're just in animated suspension. We're sailing, we're soaring, we're drifting, we're flying. And that's without drugs. So this is the body's natural chemistry that can provoke that experience. But it doesn't happen all the time because all of the levers have to be connecting. You know, it's like gears. They all have to be connecting, and they don't always. We may be distracted about something going on at work, or we may be furious at our partner because they left the toilet seat up. I know that's such a trite example, but it's true. And it may be we have money issues, or we're depressed, or we're premenstrual, or we have pain, which is one of the concomitant issues as people age, is often their bodies have areas where they're in pain. And pain hijacks pleasure. I remember years ago, my first experience with Tony Robbins, I did his very first firewalk experience in New York City years and years and years ago. He was not the guru he is today, but he was a genius. And I remember that experience so well. And now I forget completely why I was saying this to you. But there is a transcendence even that we can accomplish without a sexual encounter or an erotic encounter. But transcendence is that leaving of the body and feeling free and flying. And there's something to that that is remarkable and spiritual and holy. And I believe that sex is sacred. I really do believe that. And I often say to my clients, think about this. You're putting a part of your body inside the body of another human being. By definition, that's sacred. Can you feel that? And they do. And so that often shifts the dynamic away from what we see as mechanical or obligatory, the worst kind of sex, or transactional sex, which is, okay, it's 11:20 at night. We haven't had sex in 5 days. I guess we should have sex right now. Let's do it. And then it's maybe kiss, kiss, maybe not. And then boom, penetrated sex. And of course, very little good comes out of that other than having to check the box. Okay, we had sex in the last 5 days. And it's usually dissatisfying. And good sex and great sex, guess what? It leads to the desire for more sex. So that's part of the transcendence as well, is that we allow ourselves and give ourselves permission and give our partners permission to go there. And I think that's part of why I say sex is medicine. I think it can really help heal relationships with ourselves. It can be a wonderful way of connecting with the essence of ourselves and also sharing that with another human being or beings, depending on your lifestyle.
And I agree with you. I think it can be kind of even ruining people's sex life and they have this scheduled short sex. Scheduling sex is great, but this kind of like without kind of having erotically pleasure focused experiences. And yeah. I know why people yeah. do that, right? They know sex is good for the relationship and they cannot access their erotic self, which is very, very unfortunate because I think then you're missing out on something great and they can in a way ruin your relationship because it kind of creates resentment, frustration, all sorts of challenges. So many of our listeners are cisgender men. So when I know you work with so many people of all genders in your career. So what are the biggest blind spot you think men have when it comes to having sex with vulva owners?
I love that question. I think, guys, that one of the most important things you can do is throw away your phone. Okay, I'll take that back. Put it on a shelf because this constant being interrupted and constant being distracted, it's a hijacking of your being in your body and you're pulled back up to your head. So what I find with males is that they get trapped in what we as sexologists call performance anxiety. They're worried about what they think sex is, and they think it's a performance. It's not. It's a connection. It's an expression. It's a way of uniting with someone and feeling pleasure and other emotions as well. So I think that getting out of your head and learning how to let that go and move into the body, which I often coach my male clients to do through focused breathing techniques. I also have an expression, it's an acronym that I use with my male clients in particular, but sometimes with all clients, and it's the FOPS IT method, F-O-P-S, FOPS IT method, and it's focus on pleasurable sensations. Because when your mind that's yelling at you, oh my God, oh my God, am I hard? Am I going to stay hard? Uh-oh, is she coming? Oh my God, am I doing the right thing? Oh no, I hope I don't lose it, or he or them. What happens is you're living neck up. You're in your head zone. You're not in your body. So breathing into the body, stopping, and then relaxing into the body and focusing on pleasurable sensations that pulls you into your body. And guess what? Things start working. Because you're feeling pleasure. And this is part of what we know as Sensate Focus training. And there are so many great resources out there. And I'm sure you have taught this in all of your work that, you know, Sensate Focus methods are really for every person to have better sexual experiences. I think that there also is another aspect to what men tend to get trapped in. And that's, okay, this has just hit me. Afraid of the talk. Okay. Like, I know, guys, it's like she says to you, this is heterosexual, we need to talk. And you go, oh, shit. Oh, no, here it comes. And I wonder how long is this going to take? Because this is going to go on forever. And so having an agreement with your partner that you'll have a specific amount of time, like for 2 minutes, let her talk, you shut up, you listen, breathe, then you respond, and then you let it go. So being willing and able to communicate what's working, what's not working, that's really critical to a relationship. And I'm a devotee of the original work of John Gray, who actually wrote one of the accolades on the back cover of my book, Chasing Sex. And I was a student of his twice in my early career, where I loved his paradigm about Mars and Venus. And I know that many psychologists have poo-pooed his work and put him down. His work really has meaning and has been validated in many ways since then. And what he says is, when men get upset, they take out a hammer. They want to fix it. When women get upset, they pick up the phone. And they talk to their girlfriends. So if we can learn how to bridge that divide, I mean, I think it's great that this binary of gender roles exists. even though I'm for being authentically who you are and pronouns and all of this, I think it's all wonderful and important. At the same time, I think we need to acknowledge and honor how different we are as well as how similar we all are. So if men could just understand that she needs to talk, she needs to communicate. And that could be true even if you're a gay male. You know, couples need to communicate and they need to honor where that other person is at. And guess what you need to do? You need to build a bridge. You don't need to stay on your mountain and yell across the divide at each other. You need to build a bridge. Our world right now needs to build a bridge because that's the schism that we're all living in. Enough about politics.
Me and you can talk about that for hours, but yeah, I think they also brought up such a great point with kind of not being socialized to talk about things that are difficult. Because I know for many of my male clients, it feels like if they're having a conversation about issues, they cannot fix it. Like immediately, we're failing. Right. Therefore, it's just so hard to talk about things. Or for women, because all throughout years, we're more socialized into feeling our emotions, being able to experience it, communicate it. For many men, they're just like not comfortable with emotions that comes up. So that sometimes they shut down or they get angry and that gets in the way of them communicating effectively. And what's interesting is like many men, even today, they feel they have to deliver pleasure. I love motivated men. I appreciate them. But I think that like it's really helpful if you're thinking about it more as a teamwork. You're co-creating something with your partner. It's not your responsibility to bring your partner to orgasm, to deliver mind-blowing sexual experiences. You're just playing a part and your partner playing a part and your partners. And that's what makes it delicious.
I love that. And I think sex is play. Mm-hmm. It's adult play. So, and I also use with my couples that concept of you're a team, you're in this together. Mm-hmm. So this is where the performance aspect comes in, as well as like, I've got to get the job done and I got to get it done perfectly. And it's got to be mind blowing. Let go of all that, because it is what it is. And each experience is going to be different based on the stars, the wind, the temperature, what you ate, how much you drank, how you feel about your body, how you feel about each other. Really. There's a wonderful formula from The Erotic Mind by Jack Moran, which I think is important to also share about when couples kind of lose that spark together and lose touch. And maybe I'm trying to think about how to weave it toward myself as a memoir writer, but it's called the erotic formula, and it's excitement or desire equals attraction plus a perceived obstacle. And so oftentimes it's same stuff, different day, right? In a relationship, and people get into sexual boredom. I hate to say that, but they do. And then they get discouraged. And then they kind of let it go and they turn it off. And then years go by and then they book an appointment with you or me because they're sexless. And so there's something so important about keeping that going and finding in your mind and in your emotional self what might be a perceived obstacle that you can actually invent. You know, and maybe it's why so many people engage in, I'll say, light BDSM play. You know, like, oh, let's get some cute, like, fluffy handcuffs and play with those in the bedroom. Or let's make sure that you're not spending every single day and every single night in your sweats at each of your computers in your two home office rooms. And you really don't ever dress up or make yourself not available. There are so many things that we could say to help your listeners about how to spice things up and how to keep that flow going, because it's very important to keep sex alive.
Mm-hmm. And you have to invest in it if you're older in a relationship.
Make it a priority. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Sorry to interrupt you. I love that, because I feel like, as you said, I feel boredom is such a big issue for people in long-term relationship, and they turn to blame their partners versus thinking about create a way that you can make spark, as you were talking about. So You have classes that you taught, workshops, movies, like all sorts of things. You wrote erotica. So how do you want to be remembered in the world of sexology?
Well, I think that there's two parts to me right now. There's Patty and Dr. Patty, and I really feel that I have left my legacy. I'm known as the mother of sex coaching. I started the first, it's the premier sex coach training and certification organization in the world, sexcoachletteru.com. And if you're interested in being trained as a sex coach, pop over there. I'm an advisor now. I no longer am running it, which is a delight because now I'm liberated to really return to a home of mine, meaning that writing is a home. And I've written 6 books so far. My memoir, Chasing Sex, is my 6th book. And one of my books, The Adventures of Her in France, was an erotic adventure story.
I read that one.
Yes, that was really fun to write. And it's so funny because now that I'm semi-retired, I'm an art student again. And I'm about to go to Italy this year, where I will be studying watercolor. But it was another painting trip that inspired writing that erotic adventure novel called The Adventures of Her in France 20 years ago. So here we go again. Maybe a new book will come out of that. And then I really want to write a book. I have 2 books in the works, a book about my daughter who died of AIDS after 20 years of living with it, one of the first women in the world to contract HIV/AIDS, full AIDS at a young age, and that journey, a roller coaster ride. That book has been written. I need to go back and look at it because it's a very painful book for me. And secondly, I want to write a book about my beloved Robert Dunlap, because I want to be a voice for those of us who are aging to get our ducks in a row and prepare for dying and death. Death is not a negative. And I have very strong views about sex, money, and death, all very controversial topics. And I've written about all of them and taught about all of them. And that's really where I'm headed now, is writing my next 2 books. And then I don't know what. I'm not really sure. But I'd be delighted to read a little piece of my book if we have time.
Yes, yes. I would love to hear
ready?
It in your own voice. Yes.
Okay,
excited.
I'm going to read the story about when I met my life and business partner, Robert Dunlap. We were together 17 years, and he died unexpectedly on a trip to Eastern Europe in 2017. So this is our encounter. "So who are you?" he asks in that resonant tenor voice that captivates my attention, a flirty look in his deep brown eyes. Robert is a tall, thin man with graying auburn sideburns, a smile that could light up the Hollywood sign, and a chiseled jawline that speaks of stardom. He stands in the living room, just near the entryway, chatting with my friend Margot as if they'd known each other for eons. Turns out they did. 25 years on stages, singing, dancing, acting together, all the buzz that gets you good press. She grins each time he takes out the magic mic to chat me up. Robert is preening around me like a bird on prey, wearing that signature World War II bomber jacket and matching corduroy pants over deck shoes. He looks so handsome. I like a guy who dresses well. So then I describe the room and what's around us. And it's this sensual environment. We're at a party and there are just wonderful, wonderful decor around us and hors d'oeuvres and people chatting and glasses clinking. I'm wearing the exact same tawny autumn colors that the room exudes: golds, greens, browns, velvets and silks, curvy and soft, sensuality at all costs. I had just had my colors done by a stylist in the Los Angeles area, and I was determined to be seen with the proper effect. I'm enjoying the conversation without noticing that minutes are rushing by. As Robert and I chat, my silk velvet jacket is slipping off my shoulder. My breasts are bulging under the gold low-neck blouse that the jacket has been hiding. I'm thinking to myself, I'm not getting any erotic vibes here. Just then, As I reach my hand to pull my jacket onto my right shoulder, he reaches his hand over and he says, "Stop. Keep it right there." In an instant, I know this is going to be more than a one-night chat over caviar and Chardonnay. And so it was. A 17-year ride as Life with Robert by my side was about to begin. Top that off with the realization that his initials spelled the word red. I had found my red foxy mate. And there's a lesson. The lesson learned. Sometimes people do change and things turn around that you never expected to happen.
Oh my God, I love it. I love the kind of like the build up. I love the love you shared with Robert. I know how meaningful and amazing it was. And he was very good looking. I think like he was an actor, right?
He was gorgeous.
And I like that he took it was demanding voice and sexy. So I can only imagine the experience and the love that you shared with him all those years and the pain that you might experience, I can imagine, after losing him so suddenly.
Yeah, he used to say, "She is the light and I am the power behind the light."
Wow.
So beautiful. So I'm very blessed to have had that relationship. And I'm open to whatever experiences life has to offer now.
Well, Patty, for people that they want to learn more about you, about the book, all your experiences, what are some of the places that they can go to find you?
The best place to go is to my website, drpattybritton.com, and there's a menu tab at the top that says memoir. In fact, there also are two pop-ups that will come onto the website the minute you visit it, drpattybritton.com, and those pop-ups lead you to the memoir page. And part of what's fun is how I'm marketing the book is I'm offering 52 weeks of teaching to anyone who wants it for free. It's called the 52 Lessons for Life. And one of the pop-ups leads you right to signing up for the 52 lessons. Because throughout my book and throughout my life, I've always been an educator. I've always been a teacher. And so as I go through my own adventures and experiences in the book, there's always something that I pull out, which is a lesson learned. And those become 52 that you can use for a whole year's worth of learning. And you can also buy the book by going to chasingsexthebook.com. Leads you right to the memoir page. So that's really what I'm about right now. And I offer mentorship and supervision to other sexologists looking for that kind of work. And I don't really take clients anymore unless it's an extraordinary person who really, really, really needs me. And then we can talk.
Well, Patty, from bottom of my heart, I'm grateful for everything you've done for the field. I benefited from your teaching. Your work has been such influence in our field, the advocacy, all the love and passion you bring to your work. I'm very, very grateful. And I cannot wait to hear more about all this amazing work that you're doing, all to read all the future books. And thank you so much for sharing part of your life experiences with us through this book.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy to be here with you today.
What a gift it was to sit down with Dr. Patty Britton. Her story, her insights, and her honesty are such a powerful reminder that a great sex life isn't something you're just born with, it's something you curate. Reading her memoir, Chasing Sex, Wanting Love, Finding Myself, was such a beautiful reminder that it's never too late to reconnect with your body, your pleasure, and your truth. If you haven't picked it up yet, I highly recommend it. And before you go, a quick reminder about our LA Love Lab matchmaking event coming up on Saturday, October 4th. I hope you guys get the ticket for yourself, for your loved ones. You can find the full details and ticket links in the show notes. Thank you again for joining me today. I'm Dr. Nazanin Mo'ali, and this is Sexology. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.